Well, welcome back to Coast, where you are part of the programs. Great to have you here. Hey, next week, by the way, we've got some great shows. First of all, we've got Jimmy Church in for you tomorrow night with his special guest. I'll be on Sunday, of course. And then as we get your week going Monday, Kevin Mitnick will be a special guest. He's the ex-hacker. He'll be talking about some of the things he has done in his life. We'll be talking about Science of the Soul with Claude Swanson. Then on the Tuesday night program, we're going to talk about near-death experiences, secrets of the universe. William Forsten joins us talking about the power grid and EMPs on Wednesday. And we'll be talking with Joe McQuinville about a very fascinating story about his search for Christopher on the other side. He lost his son. We'll be talking about that. Mark Lerner, the astrologer, joins us on Thursday. We'll be talking about the wisdom of the oracle as well. And then on Friday night, Sharon Lynn Wythe joins us as we talk about names and how your name determines who you are. And then, of course, we'll have those open lines on Coast to Coast AM. We will be back with your calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We are back with open lines, and let's go east of the Rockies. John at St. Petersburg, Florida. John, thanks for holding so long.
Thank you. I hope this will help someone. If my notion is correct, these entities exist on an electromagnetic field, or they are their own electromagnetic field. Now, particularly in the case of an adversarial one, and they range as they do, if you can disrupt that field, disrupt it badly, you have something to fight them with. Now, what I've done is I've taken a neon lighting transformer, I've rigged it up much like a very crude Jacob's ladder.
Okay.
The difference between mine and some other ones is that mine's very powerful. If I read the tag right, it booms out about 6,000 volts when you fire it.
Wow.
My problem is I can't fire it up like it is. I got to rewire it. I got to redo the wands, and I got to use tiles to hold on to the wand.
I'm glad you know what you're doing. I'd electrocute myself, John.
Well, I've had some luck. I ran into a guy who was a former officer in the Army. He was an electronics warfare expert, and he kind of schooled me along. I don't really know what I'm doing either.
But, be careful.
Yeah. Okay, so I've got this thing. Now, my premise is that the people who have been using the Jacob's ladders at investigations and stuff, who think that they're feeding these things so they can manifest, I don't think it's going that way. I think it's probably like shark repellent, and if you've got a hard enough hit, you might be cracking the thing's skull. Now, I keep hearing these stories about people who see an old Victorian house or something, they think, oh, how wonderful. We'll sink every last dime we've got into this thing and turn it into a bed and breakfast. Well, they get there and they do that. They find out there's something else there, and it isn't friendly. It's knocking them around. It's kicking the pets. It's maybe even trying to push a kid down the stairs. Now, I'm sure that somebody might be up for taking a crack at one of these.
How do you know where to aim it or anything?
Well, here's what you have to do. It's going to be omnidirectional. You're sending out this pulse.
You just turn it on. Bam. Bang. Okay.
Bam, bam, bam. But you got to be careful. First of all, you can't have anybody in the house. It's putting out large amounts of ozone.
Okay.
Especially well. Okay. You don't want any pets in there, plants, things like that.
What about you? Once you turn it on, do you run out of there?
Well, you've got to have it wired from outside the house. You can't go in there when the thing is running. But
okay.
What you've got to do is move it around tactically, unless you have more than one. I'd love to have a dozen of these things. I have a plan if I did.
How big are they? How big are they, John?
Well, this one is the board. I've just got it on a piece of 2x6, okay? And the 2x6 is 2.5 feet long. The wands are in the end, but the wands are too thin.
Uh-huh.
I have to go get some pieces of like this copper piping, and I got to have something to hold on to the piping that breaks the contact between it and the wood. Otherwise, I'm afraid I'll have a fire.
Good point.
I have a few little things to do to it too. But what you would do, you would set this thing off. all around the house. You'd run it for about an hour, hour and a half, maybe longer than that, and rotate it around the house. Now, if I'm right and this thing works and you are cracking its skull, you're letting it know you have the ability to give it a real bad time. You might get it to realize, gosh, you know, I think I should leave here.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean after you're done, you've eradicated this thing like Arab has tented your house, although that works with something else, which is DC, which is excessively nasty. I thought about doing that one, but it's really risky.
How did you come up with this?
Well, I got aggravated watching how these people just got pushed around and how they couldn't do a thing. Oh, yeah, they get a showman and they'd go in there and they'd smudge the place and they'd say prayers and things like that. But I all of a sudden it occurred to me, wait, the REM pods and the meters that are picking these things up, they're picking up an electromagnetic field. So what do? You sock it to the field. You bang into the field hard with an awful lot of juice. And that's what I would do. You have to use these things.
Novel. Now, have you experimented with it yet?
No, but I have a hell of a field test target if I can ever get this off the ground. It's up in Cincinnati or Dayton. It's a former rectory for the Catholic priests where they used to put them on ice when they got in trouble. That seems to be the nastiest place, or at least as nasty as any place I can think of, and that's the one I want to get.
And there you think it's got spirits and hauntings and everything.
Well, it's got adversarial ones. Not all of them are adversarial.
Right.
There's also like a morality thing to it, too. There might be other stuff huddled there that's benign, but I got to look at it about the same way the military does when they do a drone strike on a Arabic wedding.
There's sadly collateral damage, right?
Well, yeah, but the point is you got people who everything in the world they've got is invested in this, and they're like in this death struggle with this thing, and they're usually at their wit's end. They're worn down. They're in bad shape. So if I can get this thing rewired and I can get it to where it won't catch fire and I can get it safe enough, I'd like to take a crack at this rectory.
That's interesting.
But in the meantime, there's other people that might benefit out of knowledge of this, because you can go to Edmund Scientific's catalog. You might still be able to get their small ones. Now, there is a way, if I'm also right, that you can use these self-defense zappers if you feel something coming up on you. Some people can. And you just bring this thing up and pop it a few times. I think you can get it to back off, but there's not a lot of range on it.
If this works, you should patent the thing.
No, because you can't. One, it's using too much stuff that other people built.
I see.
I don't know the company name on the transformer, but somebody else built it. People built these things. You know, really smart fifth graders have built them and used them.
Really? Now, what do you call it exactly, John? What's it called?
Well, I had a bunch of different names for it. One, I called it, the first thing I called it was a boo bomb. And then I named it after a cat that I had named Puff. So I call it Puff because it will puff.
It's a puff.
It will puff.
So what are the chances of getting it to not catch on fire?
I've got to rig a way to have the tiles hold on to these pieces of copper pipe or tubing. If I can do that, I think I got the fire part beat. Like I said, if you light this thing off, you probably want to put tiles on the floor under it too, especially if there's a rug there. And you want to get out of the house before you turn it on, then run it for a while, then turn it off, move it somewhere else. You got to move it all the way over from the basement.
Jeez.
All the way about. Probably.
Well, you've experimented with this thing, right?
No, I've never lit the damn thing off. I'm looking forward to it. If I can get the tile, if I can find all these parts that I lost.
Well, don't blow yourself up in the process, John.
Well, no, but in the meantime, if somebody else can do this, you know, because there are other people out there a lot more handy than I am, and they actually know some of what they're doing. I'm just a dreamer. You know, I threw this.
Well, yeah, you have to dream, but we got to get the dreamer with the guy who understands electronics.
Yeah, find a former military electronic warfare expert, because ECM is the first thing I thought about when I started thinking about how you would do this. You know, the people who they make a way that airplanes try and screw each other's radar up and
yeah,
screw each
exactly.
other's missiles up and things like that.
Hey, John, do me a favor. George at coasttocoastam.com, send me a little blip about you. Because I want Tim Banal to get a hold of you, and we might do a story on this thing. This is an interesting thing to do away with evil spirits. Unfortunately, the good ones are going to get zapped too, though. Karen in Gig Harbor, Washington, first-time caller. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Hey, you were on hold for 2 weeks almost.
I'm so thankful to be talking to you.
Well, great. Get close to your phone, if you would.
Okay, is that better?
That's better. Great. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So I wanted to tell you my story. It's a little bit odd, but it's all truth, and I'm not embellishing.
For this show, the odder, the better.
Okay. Well, before I was born, I remember being alive, and I have a vivid recollection of standing like in front of glass and looking down at the earth, and I had a male standing next to me that was kind of in a uniform, and I also had some kind of uniform on, and he just said, well, it's time to go. And I said, I don't know about this. And he said, well, you agreed to do it, so, you know, it's time for you to go. And it's kind of like I fell to earth.
Now, is this a feeling of reincarnation, or you think you were, like, up in heaven somewhere?
No, I just think that I was alive before, but I also knew who I was going to be.
You know what? You were in the guff. You know what that is?
No.
That is where they store souls. And I think your soul was in there waiting to be put into a human body, the little baby. And you probably had memory of that, which is very unbelievable.
Yeah, well, it has never left me. And I was not raised in a Christian home, but it has never left me. And I just want to share two experiences in my life that I feel is directly related to, you know, my
Give me one. That's all we'll have time for. So go for it.
Okay. So I was 38 years old. My husband had a race team, professional race team. We were at our shop. It was like 1:30 in the morning. My husband's taking fuel out of the car. I was standing about 30 feet away, and I heard a voice that said I was going to catch on fire.
Oh, geez.
And so I just put my hands to my face, and I was just engulfed in methanol fuel, which is jet fuel.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you would have been toast, literally.
Yeah, so putting my hands on my face saved my airway. And it just saved my life. But get this, we're 25 miles out of town. It's 1:30 in the morning, and an ambulance just happened to be driving by our house.
And saw this.
And just heard the 911 call go out. They pull in, and it's like, oh, my God, they're here, you know, because I'm totally... Even though I was so badly burned, I was totally alert.
Jeez. And how was your husband? Was he okay?
My husband?
Yeah. Was he close by?
Yeah. He just got some singed eyebrows and hair on his arm. But, you know, being in professional racing, you have all the safety equipment, you know.
Sure.
They're standard. So no one could ever figure out what happened. But anyway, so I got in the ambulance, and I, at the time was a nurse that I'd worked at a hospital, like 25 miles from where we lived, was a trauma center. And I told the ambulance crew to call the hospital and ask for this specific person who I'd gone to nursing school with. He answered the phone.
He was there. And, good.
And he is the one that we went by helicopter to a city hospital that was a burn unit.
What do you think that voice was that basically warned you about this?
Well, I feel like it's a voice that is I've always known, and that's what I'm saying about living or remembering prior to actually coming to Earth. And it's just a very trusting, loving voice.
Could be a guardian angel.
It could be. It's in the voice of an authority that, it'd be like you sitting there and then hearing, George, you're going to catch on fire. Are you going to believe it and act on it? Or are you just,
Well, and how many people, Karen, don't act on it at all? Let me take a few more quick calls before the break. Tom, you've got a text or tweet for us. What do you have back there?
Did you read the Talmud?
The Talmud?
Yeah.
Part of it, not the whole thing.
Oh, it's really interesting.
You're reading
it? Term guff.
Oh, about that? Well, I knew about Jewish souls and mythology.
Well, because it comes from the Talmud, so
yes,
it was interesting.
I'm a pretty well-read guy.
You know what? So Jerome from Pennsylvania, talk about people with multiple personalities, and have you ever met a person who had a few?
No. Yes. Oh, yeah, I've met a few. I've met a few with different personalities that change at a whim.
Weird, right?
It's weird to handle. It's weird to live with. It's weird to, be with for anybody who's with somebody with basically split personalities. That would be an interesting open line show.
Did you ever see the movie Split?
Split, yeah.
Fantastic.
That would be an interesting thing. All right, great. Let me take another call. Let's go to Neil in Bakersfield, California. Neil, go for it.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Okay, my friend. Thank you.
I've been doing scientific research and seeing the invisible dimension.
Oh, really?
It's been 13 years, and I figured out what's going on Earth. It's like the Matrix movie. I could see these spirits in trees. I could see them in the clouds. I could see them. I have night vision.
Are they good spirits or are they good or evil?
They're evil.
That's not good.
I had to prove. I'm like a detective. I had to prove what's going on. I got some proof that I found out in the Bible. It said, when Jacob was wrestling with the so-called angel.
Yes.
He said the prince has prevailed over God and men.
The prince of darkness.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we lost the war, and the Earth is a slave planet, and the moon is a war planet. Now, the moon is not a moon. If you see a planet that's not spinning, it's just a planet that's dead.
Well, some people think the moon is artificial. I'm not sure I believe that, but some people say that.
Yeah, it is.
You believe that, huh?
Of course. What happened was when they came, I don't know, I tried to get a timeline, and I think it was 27,000 years ago. And when we lost the war, they put us in the Stone Ages, and they took everybody that had technology and or spiritual wisdom, and they took them on the moon or other planets to be a slave to build their spaceships and war.
Interesting.
And war,
well, we gotta win this war back, and if this is the case, we've gotta beat them at their own game, to be sure. Hey, Mr. Lobo is going to join us in a moment to talk about some incredible, strange movies on Coast to Coast AM. Well, lots of us like scary movies, television shows. We like to be scared, but why do we like to be scared? That's one of the things I asked our dear friend, Mr. Lobo, who investigates and has the answer. Mr. Lobo is the host of the late-night movie program called Cinema Insomnia, which is a cult sensation for more than 13 years. And he's been on the program before. He is got this exciting persona about him when it has to do with talking about horror films and, you know, the genre of movies. And let's bring him back. You know, it's almost Halloween, and it's time to have some fun. Mr. Lobo, welcome back.
It's so wonderful to be back, George. I'm so in the spirit of Halloween. I am pouring myself a spooky concoction. I'm going to mix 2% and whole milk, George, and I'm going to drink it live on the air.
No, don't do it, Mr. Lobo. Don't do it. We need you every year, but you haven't been here in a while. What have you been up to, Eric?
Always Mr. Lobo, always Mr. Lobo. But my friends call me, even my mom calls me Mr. Lobo now. But
no more Mr. E, huh?
Mr. E, I like that. I like that. I've been getting some gardening in, and I've been, you know, washing the dog, and I've been still, of course, hosting horror movies. We're still syndicated on AMG TV affiliate stations. We're on the Roku box, which I don't know if you know about Roku.
I've got them all over the place.
Okay, well, we're on a channel called Zombie TV, and we will soon be on other Roku channels as well. We're starting to make in theater announcements for Alamo Draft House Cinemas. I'm doing a countless number of convention appearances, film festivals. I'm the MC of Blobfest. Have you ever heard of Blobfest?
I've never been to one.
Blobfest is in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania, and it is the town where they filmed the movie The Blob. And just like in Rocky in Philadelphia, they want to run up and down the steps. In Phoenixville, everybody wants to run out of the theater to escape from the blob, and so they have a big event every year where the whole audience gets up and runs out the theater, and there's a street fair and classic cars and double features with the blob, and it's a wonderful event, and I host it every year. And Monster Bash is a big convention for me. I've got some feature films that I'm in. I'm in the remake of Plan 9 from Outer Space. I'm also in a film called Midnight Show, which is a bunch of grindhouse movie trailers with a wraparound story. So things have been pretty busy. Yeah.
What is it doing? I'm doing fine, and you know, this is a great time of year. I love October, and I love the season because it's Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's. It's just a great last 3-4 months. But
are you wearing your costume? George, you wearing your clown costume like you usually do?
You know I hate clowns, Mr. Now I'll never get any sleep later. What is it about people?
You.
Why do people want to be scared?
People want to be scared. And I think there's a lot of reasons. There's a lot of psychology. You know, I don't think there's just one reason why people like to be scared. But I think the main thing is in horror, especially with horror films, I think that one is just escapism. I think that we get to focus our energy on something that we can control, you know, a danger that is safe, you know. And I think there are two kinds of horror movies. I think they're both roller coasters. One kind of roller coaster, you get off and you kiss the ground because you're so glad to be that it's over and you're back on terra firma, and those are the more intense horror movies. And the other kind of roller coaster are the more fun horror movies, which is the roller coaster where you get off and you get back in line again because you want to get on that same roller coaster all over again. And so I think that, you know, I think that that's a big part of it. Is I think it's a controllable fear. And I think that that's a lot better than worrying about Ebola and giant glasses of milk chasing you down the street.
It's healthy. It's a healthy scare, isn't it?
It is. I think it's interesting because people have this idea that horror fanatics are violent. You know, they had this film in the 50s, The Seduction of the Innocent, where they were trying to ban all the horror cartoons. And they always have the horror fan as a guy in a leather jacket stabbing a tree with a switchblade. And horror fans, and I'm gonna blow the secret right here, horror fans are indoor kids. Horror fans are in the chess club. You know, horror fans are the guys who can't climb the rope in gym class. Those are the horror fans. You know, they're not the guys ripping people's heads off and throwing themselves in front of trains. Those are like stockbrokers and doctors. Horror fans are mild-mannered, by and large, sweet, good, salt-of-the-earth, backbone of America kind of folk.
And it seems to be growing, isn't it? That field of horror in movies, low-budget movies. People
it
who
is.
Have these things.
Horror is one of those genres that always make money, and I think because of that, it doesn't get a lot of respect. But it is growing, and it's growing into new markets, you know, where everyone's looking to make money. And you can see the genre. Sometimes horror movies are for kids. I think in the 40s and 50s they were for kids. I think in the 60s they were for teenagers in the drive-ins who were making out. I think in the 70s they were kind of like for college, you know, age where people were, trying to shock kids. Find the greatest amount of shock value to sort of dare their friends. I think in the 80s it was fun. It was almost for kids again. And I think now, which is really exciting, is that, you know, the last frontier of people who have control over the money are young girls. So you have, everything is kind of geared toward young girls, it seems. It seems like you've got a Monster High, Dolls, you've got Twilight, you've got even science fiction properties like Doctor Who is being made safe for 16-year-old girls. So I think it's just, you know, they're spending their money. The boys are all off to video games, and the girls are still spending the money or controlling the dollars as to where the movie dollars anyway. And I think that's you go to these horror conventions now. It used to be I hate to use the term sausage fest, but it was mostly guys. And now you go to horror conventions and it's guys and girls. So the market has increased by 50% in my lifetime.
Well, it sure has. And you know, when we were youngsters, you know, we had in our local television stations, there was always some kind of a guest host who did horror movie introductions. And, you know, in Detroit growing up, Mr. Lobo, I had Sir Graves Ghastly. And
oh,
then my
the
favorite
legend.
Buddy, my favorite, Mr. It was Dr. Morgus. Do you remember him?
He was Morgus. I certainly have heard him on your program. And then there was a movie that Dr. Morgus, Wacky
That's
World
right.
of Dr. Morgus.
I love that guy.
I believe I think the Nutty Professor ripped him off. I think
you're right. I think you're absolutely
but
right.
But yeah, he is a legend. You were lucky to have two legends. Morgus is a legend in my industry, and also
Sir
Graves Ghastly is another legend who was also syndicated in many other markets, including Virginia.
He used to come out of a coffin and, you know, and start his introductions, and then he'd go
a lot
back
of them
into
did.
It.
Coffins, that's usually what you do. You stagger out of a coffin and then you make your introductions and a lot of corny jokes and rubber chickens and all that good stuff. I think that there are still horror hosts. Sven Gulli is enjoying, I think, probably his on MeTV affiliates. There's Sven Gulli, mm-hmm. who used to be the best kept secret in Chicago, but now because of his affiliation with MeTV, people are enjoying him coast to coast. Elvira is still hosting horror movies. She's on Hulu right now, hosting Charles Band movies. So it's kind of they're still around. They're under the floorboards. They're lurking, but horror hosts still walk among us. And Mr. Lobo is still in syndication and still doing my program. And it's interesting. Some people treat you like you're dead. You know, you're at a convention and they look at all your DVDs and stuff, and they're like, "Oh, it's just too bad they don't do this sort of thing anymore." And it's like, "Hello, I'm right here. Can you see me?
I haven't died. I'm still here." Has technology, that being internet television, satellites, more cable, has that helped the little horror genre survive?
I think so. I think it's allowed more different kinds of genres to survive because, you know, the horror host is kind of more in the fun kind of genre of horror stuff. And, there are a lot of people who grew up as fans of this who are able to do their own shows for YouTube or make their own movies. You look at a movie like Plan 9 from Outer Space, you can make that movie, you know, on a camera the size of your thumb in better quality, you know. So
that's right.
If anyone who's got the desire to contribute to the pageantry of low budget horror films, you know, they can just go for it. And the only big problem is distribution, and which is weird, because I mean, on the one hand, anyone can see it, but on the other hand, it's hard to get people to know you're out there, so it becomes a problem of, you know, if you do create the better mousetrap, it's making sure people know where it is and trying to drive eyeballs to it. So
some of the low budget movies like Blair Witch, these horror films,
right, found footage
just exploded. Now, they had marketing money behind them, but the initial investment to make the movies was nothing. I think like $15,000 or something like that.
Right.
How are those so successful?
Paranormal activity and the like, yes.
What happens? I mean, does Social Network fuel it? How do these films get to be so successful?
I think in the case of, and I could be wrong, the case of Blair Witch, I think they were bought by Sony or something, and then they put an outrageous amount of promotion dollars into it. So I guess your best bet is that if you can make a movie on the cheap and then someone sees the potential in it, a distributor sees the potential in it, then they can put big money in the distribution of it. But sometimes if you're lucky, you can make a low budget movie and it can go viral. You know, people put films on the internet and, you know, they've been seen by, you know, millions and millions of people. You know, and there are people with films on the YouTubes who make thousands and thousands of dollars because it,
sure.
You know, those ad revenues add up, and you know, and so it is exciting in that way, to where if something catches the popular imagination, whatever Scary Puppy 3 in your backyard can be the next big thing. But I think for the most part, the big ones like Paranormal Activity and Blair Witch are in those cases, I think they had a major distributor and you know, people who saw the potential in it, who said, you know what, we could sell this, and then bought it. And then it's like flipping a house. They bought it and then they sold it. And then you've got runaway success.
Have you seen the YouTube videos of a young man who has lost his lower extremities, and he somehow had a artwork sketch made up, and then they turned it into some real-life looking gook, and they attached it to his body, so it looks like his intestines are coming out and everything, and they had a clown. And they put this kid in an underground parking lot,
yeah,
garage, and the clown and the clown was there with a saw,
yeah,
and the kid's there and he has no legs, but he had phony body parts sticking out of him, you know, with the intestines about 6 feet long and blood looking, and so, you know, the clown's there with his saw, and people would come out of an elevator,
right,
to go to their cars, and they'd see this clown, and then the clown would start chasing these people, or the kid without the legs would crawl to them saying, help me, help me.
Wow.
And these people are running and screaming and everything, and one, I'm saying, what a great gag, but two, isn't that dangerous for those people? Because what if one of those guys coming off an elevator has a gun? He's not going to think twice, you know, if he's got a concealed weapons permit or something. He's going to shoot that clown, isn't he?
I think about that often. I have not seen the one that you've talked about, George, although I may go find it after the show. But, I have seen similar ones where, you know, someone's pretending to be a monster or a psychopath or a ghost, and they jump out at people in real situations and scare the living daylights out of them coming out of an elevator or in a public place. And I hope it doesn't happen, but I think that that trend will start ending fast. If someone gets seriously hurt by a victim of a prank who happens to have a concealed weapon or a not concealed, you know, some people,
that's
some
right.
places you don't even have to conceal it. You know, so I, you know, that's why I'm kind of, I'm not a big fan of the sort of the reality-based stuff, although that's kind of, I guess that always could have happened on Candid Camera years ago.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware. But now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I knew. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living in, century. Your voice is always welcome here on my radio. Call in with your space transmitter or your telephone. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Coast to Coast.
Fantastic. I'll see you Sunday night, Jimmy Church on Saturday. For Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.